This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join our guest from the United States today. It is Trader Nick. Good afternoon from London, Nick. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good to be back with you.
And I believe it's a public holiday where you are. So thank you for taking some time out.
Of course. Happy to be here. There's always something to be talking about in markets. And I think, Johnny, with this week, it was important that I came on just because to follow up on such a critical week with so much commentary from central banks, the cessation of the war in the Middle East, it has been a really busy week.
It has indeed. I mean, this agreement that's finally been signed between the United States and Iran is, dare I say, almost historic, but we'll wait and see how long it holds and lower oil prices as a result of the agreement. But let's go back a little bit to the FOMC meeting on Wednesday night, which, of course, again, that was quite historic because it was the first time we heard from new Fed chief Kevin Warsh, and it made interesting listening because it was slightly more hawkish than people had expected.
I think when we had the rumors around Trump and cabinet making the selection of a new Fed chair, many people initially, if you remember, there was the floating idea of Kevin Hassett, who was perceived by the market to be a very, very dovish pick, meaning he would cut interest rates, he would find ways to do that. So then naturally, when the vote or the switch went actually to Kevin Warsh, people kind of anticipated initially something similar. He's Trump's man. He's going to cut rates. But let's remind ourselves that Jerome Powell was also Trump's man or Trump's pick. And I think that what the market kind of came to understand with Kevin Warsh during his press conference was the loyalty still remains to the Federal Reserve first and foremost for him. The one way I would explain, if I was explaining very simply the synopsis on the commentary made by Kevin Warsh, he mentioned the word inflation like 3-1 in regards to his mentioning of labor market. He did briefly talk about the housing market shows some concerns. The commentators or the reporters asked questions about whether or not he saw monetary policy as restrictive enough currently. And one would suggest, or one would argue probably, that if you think he's going to come out being very dovish, he would take that opportunity to point out that, yes, I think it is sufficiently restrictive. I think that the path to lower rates makes sense. But that's not what we got. Despite a couple different opportunities within the conversation to take the dovish approach, Kevin Warsh did not. And I think that that's where the market really sort of woke up to the idea that, okay, he may truly want lower interest rates, but he knows that the votes that happened right before that were publicized during the 30 minutes prior, they showed 9 out of 18 committee members thinking that rates were likely to move higher by end of year. And so Kevin Warsh is a smart guy. He's looking around the table and he's saying, okay, we have a lot of committee members that seem more poised to react to inflation than jobs. Even if he does want to rate cut, it is not in his ability to just strong arm that. He works within a Democratic, you know, committee of other central bankers. And so we have the situation where he declined the opportunity to really speak his book on the idea of being more dovish. And I think that's what the market had expected from him. And we did not get that. We got much more of a loyalty to fighting inflation, loyalty to the Federal Reserve. Of course, there was no disrespect towards the president. I think there's a lot of pent-up energy. And there was one thing also, Johnny, that I thought was worth mentioning. When asked later, I don't know exactly what was or where Trump was when this took place, but President Trump was asked by a reporter his response or reaction to the comments made by Kevin Warsh. And Trump seemed not too worried. He said, we've got a good guy in there. So I'm paraphrasing here. We've got a good guy in there now. And wherever, you know, he's going to let him take the lead on that. So it's almost like even though Kevin Warsh may need to hold rates steady for a while, Trump seems less worried about it. It's an interesting dynamic because, again, I would suggest that if Powell said the same things, they would not be met so positively. But in the eyes of you know, the market, the response was much more hawkish than anticipated. A lot of people, I think, thought he would take the stand, talk about rate cuts, talk about the path to lower inflation being one that we're already sustainably on. And we just didn't quite get that. We got much more of a, we've still got inflation to work on. Our commitment is to getting to 2% inflation still. Although he did mention that specifically he thinks personally that maybe the more important number within the 2% target is what is left of the decimal, not right of the decimal. That was a very interesting line. I think that was one of the more dovish things that he said, was pointing out basically that he thinks 2% as a range is a good target, but that is very different than 2.0, because that could theoretically be 2.99, right? 2.99 still being a comfortable level is a very different, that is 50% higher than a 2.0% target. So very interesting commentary. And again, looking forward to hearing much more from him on where the Fed committee is going. Last thing I'll say is he mentioned the word task force many, many times within this. It was a bit of a meme going across social media following. He mentioned task force several times about how he had plans to launch 5 separate task force for various projects within the Federal Reserve to do some overhauling, some changes within that he thinks are necessary. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
And following these comments, Nick, we saw a stronger dollar. Was that completely directly connected?
Pretty much, yes. I think as soon as we saw, I was watching the lower time frame charts when this took place. As soon as the votes came in, 9 out of 18 voting thinking that the Fed was going to raise rates by end of year from the committee members, the dollar shot off to the upside. It has since followed through at the time of recording this for the following, you know, day and a half since then, or 2 days since then. It has moved higher. All currencies against the dollar, all the majors took a beating versus the dollar in the last few days. The euro back down to monthly lows, I believe, as well as the British pound, making a large move lower against the dollar as well. Back down, by the way, to the levels that we saw in April and in March. So the pound, the euro, the yen, all of these currencies taking a bit of a hit in response to what looks to be a more hawkish than anticipated Federal Reserve.
Meanwhile, Nick, I wanted to ask you about what happened on this side of the Atlantic, which saw the Bank of England hold interest rates at 3.75%. Uncertainty over the impact of high energy prices has led the Monetary Policy Committee to make that decision. Although, as we were talking off air just a moment ago, there was a slight difference in the voting. It was 7-2. 2 people voted for a rate increase rather than 1 last time out. I mean, it's a fairly neutral decision from the Bank of England, isn't it? And I suppose they are waiting to see what happens with inflation, particularly when it comes to the situation in the Middle East. This announcement from the Bank of England was before the memorandum of understanding was signed. I mean, that is a good sign. Oil prices have fallen in recent days. This was welcomed by Bank of England Chief Andrew Bailey, who said whatever happens in the future, the higher energy prices of the past 4 months means there's already some inflationary pressure in the pipeline, and the bank's job is to make sure that doesn't turn into sustained inflation above the 2% target. So you were just talking about the USA's target and whether 2% was sustainable as a target. We shall see what happens. I mean, we have earlier in the week some encouraging numbers in terms of UK CPI inflation, which was lower than expected. So perhaps the outlook isn't as negative as we'd thought maybe a few weeks ago, although there are some who are suggesting that there will be a rate rise this year, whatever happens.
I think the big, more volatile aspect of this too, Johnny, is of course what the updates in Middle East are looking like, because of course that shock to supply in oil could be very inflationary, or in now what looks to be more of a resolution path for now, that's a more inflationary assisting situation. Anyways, just to give a couple numbers to throw out there, you mentioned it briefly there a second ago. The UK CPI this week came in at 2.8% versus what was expected at 3%. And the other thing is there has actually been some reasonably healthy or better than expected, I should say, economic growth metrics out of the UK. Retail sales was better than expected. Services and manufacturing PMIs both came in better than expected. And then unemployment rate actually ticked lower to 4.9%, which was expected to stay at 5%. So you have all these figures that showed a little bit of promise. And we'll see where everything goes. I think that the really big question mark now becomes, I think, where is this inflation trend going? In the sense that, yes, lower oil prices are likely to help with it, but is it something that we've done too much damage? We're going to see a round of inflation that has to work through the system for a longer period of time or a much shorter period of time? That is the big question, I think, when it comes to, you know, whether or not the Bank of England and other central banks choose to be more aggressive with hikes or to kind of do minor hikes or not at all and wait it out. So I think that's going to be the interesting decision. You also mentioned, of course, a slight increase in votes in favor by one towards hiking rates in the UK. And we talked about it last time, the mandate specifically being that 2% target for the UK, being their sole mandate, as opposed to the, of course, we always say they still want economic growth, but the priority is on inflation for the Bank of England. And so with that 2.8, yes, that's better than expected, but is still 0.8 higher than where they would like it to be. And it's very important, especially with the economy of the UK not being nearly as robust and as strong right now. Higher inflation wreaks havoc on consumers who are already feeling the pinch. So inflation is understandably a very, very sensitive matter. And that energy shock is so scary for central banks because it's something that is sort of outside of their control. They can't control what oil does. They can only control what they do with their monetary policy, their interest rates.
Very interesting, Nick. Let's look to the next week. I don't think it's quite as busy as we've had over the last few days, but what should we look out for?
Yeah, so next week is a little bit on the quieter side. The main things would be, of course, US CPI, but we also have CPI out of Canada. We will hear some Fed commentary on Monday. On Tuesday, we have PMIs across Europe, as well as some flash services and manufacturing PMIs out of the US. We have Australian CPI. We have on Wednesday, we're getting on unemployment rate for Australia, and then on Thursday that PCE and final GDP number coming out for the US, and then Friday is pretty quiet with University of Michigan consumer sentiment numbers.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much indeed. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Johnny.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.